This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to focus on a couple of important areas in women's health. We're going to talk today to renowned women's preventive health expert, Dr. Christine Horner. Dr. Horner is a board-certified surgeon, and she's author of Waking the Warrior Goddess, which is the most comprehensive guide to all research-proven natural approaches to prevent and fight breast cancer. But since we do two parts in each of our daily Intelligent Medicine podcasts, we're going to focus in part one on the HPV vaccine. You know, there's a lot of controversy over the HPV vaccine. Is it necessary? Is it something that we want to initiate our young daughters into? And or is it potentially dangerous? There are reports of side effects. In part two, we're going to frame the discussion around Angelina Jolie's preemptive strikes against breast cancer with first breast cancer surgery, bilateral mastectomy, and then she had her ovaries taken out, bilateral oophorectomy. Is that the way to go? Dr. Horner is going to weigh in. Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, Dr. Horner.
Oh, thank you so much. It's my pleasure to be with you.
And by the way, you have a great website at drchristinehorner.com, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, usual spelling. It's the C-type Christine. It's C-H-R-I-S-T-I-N-E, and Horner is self-evident. So let's talk a little bit about the vaccine, the HPV vaccine, because this is the time of year where parents are urged to get their kids up to date on vaccinations. It's back to school time. Stop by the pediatrician, maybe pick up a prescription for Ritalin or Adderall, right? You know, these days, these kinds of medications are back to school supplies, right? In our rush to vaccinate our kids, and in particular, in this case, our daughters against all manner of harm, is it a rush to judgment? What's your take on that?
Well, you know, first of all, I want to say that I'm not universally against vaccines. I mean, there are some vaccines that, you know, definitely are excellent. However, you know, it's really interesting in this topic where people get unbelievably emotional
yes.
about it. I mean, either they're pro it
yes.
or they're against it. And so, you know, what's really best is just to look at the facts of the ones that are individually, because they really do vary a lot. And this particular vaccine is one when I started researching it and looking into the issues and the efficacy of it and the side effects associated with it, I really became quite alarmed by it. And, you know, it's one that I personally don't feel is necessary. And we can kind of go through, you know, the various different reasons why. But, you know, definitely the efficacy of it isn't so great. The incidences of the issues that it's supposedly being used for isn't very high either. And then there's a whole slew of complications that are associated with it too. And there's some great alternatives that can be used instead.
Well, great. I happen to be on the same wavelength with you. And, you know, really, it is an emotional issue, because I was actually giving a talk on mercury and vaccines. And there was a man in the audience, and he was actually the husband of a holistic doctor who'd come to hear me speak. And he got really excited. He started arguing with me.
Mm-hmm.
And was like, look, let's not get emotional about it. Let's look at the facts. And I,
right.
he said, well, you're against vaccines. I said, no, I'm for objectively assessing the risks versus the benefits. You know, they sometimes use the term "it's settled science." You know, let's put it behind us. You know, nothing to see here, folks. Just move along. But I think that we need to take a measured approach to looking at how we administer vaccines, how many vaccines, are there settings in which vaccines are absolutely necessary and appropriate? Are there some settings where we may want to be selective about vaccinating our kids? And are some kids perhaps more vulnerable to the negative effects of vaccines with perhaps certain predisposing medical conditions? I think these are all questions worth looking at, and we don't know all the answers.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. Yeah.
So let's take a look at the 4 points you made, which you think you outlined that very well on specifically the HPV vaccine, the Gardasil vaccine.
Right. Well, you know, first of all, we have to look at is this, you know, what people are getting vaccinated for? How much of an issue is it really? You know, if we want to do vaccinations, you know, to me it makes sense to be doing it for diseases that truly are extremely harmful and deadly and so forth. But if they're for diseases that hardly affect anybody and aren't really deadly, then, you know, they really need to be questioned. And that's certainly the situation with this one. So, you know, the cervical cancer is the main thing that they have a concern about. And the incidence of cervical cancer has actually gone down by 75% in the last 40 years after pap smears started to be used.
And it's not because of the Gardasil vaccine. The Gardasil vaccine just hit the scene, so we can't really attribute this decline
Correct.
Due to the vaccine.
That has nothing to do with it. It has to do with the pap smear. So there's been this 75% reduction over the last 40 years of it. So now the incidence of cervical cancer is very small. In fact, it makes up like 3% of all cancer. So it's, you know, really dropped as far as an issue is concerned. Mm-hmm. Then the next thing is that we definitely know that there's a strong association with the HPV virus. So that particular virus, the human papillomavirus, is found in about 98% of all cervical cancers. So we have a very strong association with it. Now, there's about 100 different types of HPV viruses that we can get. And some of them are completely benign and they're not associated with cervical cancer. And then there's several different strains that are. So the Gardasil vaccine actually only has two different strains in it. And so by definition, then, that's about 70% of the incidence of cervical cancer. So you're missing 30% at that point. Then they found that the efficacy of it is such that it only really covers about 50%. You know, for whatever reason. And then the other really...
So you're saying it of 70%, it's 50% of 70%, so already we're whittling it down to, you know, 35%.
So I'm just saying it's 70%, you know, is not going to be covered instantly because you don't have it. But what they find is only about 50%, you know, are showing that you know, are being covered. And then... the other, you know, really questionable thing is that in order to be able to determine if someone is, if the vaccine is going to work for them, let's say, it's not done by seeing what the incidence of an HPV infection is. Rather, what they do is to look at the blood samples to see what the antibody titers are.
To see if you seroconvert is the term in immunology.
Yes. And so what they find is that within a couple of years, the level of antibodies goes down to practically nothing for, you know, for all of them. So then the question, you know, obviously you're going, well, maybe, you know, after a couple of years, it looks like it's probably not going to be of any value anyway. So if you're immunizing 12-year-olds, you know, which they're recommending because you have to do it before somebody's sexually active, because if somebody has been exposed to the HPV and then receives the vaccine and they don't even test for that, you know, ahead of time, there is a huge increased incidence of problems with cervical lesions and cervical cancer. In fact, a 440% increased risk of cervical lesions if you give the vaccine to people who have already been exposed to the HPV virus. So you never want to do that.
That's very interesting. So I didn't even know that. That's why they want to get the girls so young, is that you actually can worsen a case of HPV by vaccinating someone who already has been exposed to HPV.
Yes, that's correct.
Wow, I didn't even know. That's a brand new fact. Thank you for sharing that.
Mm-hmm. So now we have the situation where it's like, okay, now we're going to vaccinate our 12-year-olds because we're trying to get them before they, you know, are sexually active. Mm-hmm. And then their antibody titers drop so low by the time that they're actually sexually active, they're not. It's not like covering them anymore.
So it's ideal if your daughter is going to have sex between the ages of 12 and 15. But that, maybe that's the very narrow window of efficacy.
Maybe, you know, about 50%, you know. It's not going to be 100%.
Right.
So, you know, the other issue to take into place with this, too, is that the side effects that have been reported with this are not anything that are small. In fact, there's a government reporting, you know, where you report the adverse events that occur with a vaccine. And so they have more adverse events, 33,000 reported events with this particular vaccine than any other vaccine in recorded history. Mm-hmm. And some of those reported adverse events are permanent neurological.
Right. I have a case in my practice like that of a gal who is a very, very active athlete. In fact, she got a sports scholarship in soccer to a major university, and she was a phenomenal soccer player. And all of a sudden, she started feeling really, you know, very, you know, having tremendous pains in her legs when she was exercising. Had multiple surgeries that didn't help. She became further debilitated. When I asked her, was there any prelude to this, she said, well, yeah, you know, it all seemed to start when I got my third booster of the Gardasil vaccine. Now, look, that's correlation, it's not causation, but that's in line with some of the reports of vaccine injury, very devastating neurological long-term consequences, pain syndromes, chronic fatigue-like fibromyalgia-type conditions. So,
We see they've even had, you know, with this one, they've even had like multiple sclerosis and Guillain-Barré syndrome and so forth. But, you know, they've also had over 100 deaths reported with it. So girls have gotten the vaccine and then died that day, you know, or within days of it. So the other, you know, really major fact to have here is that if a person develops the HPV infection, which is a sexually transmitted disease, it goes away by itself in 98% of the cases. Mm-hmm. So you've only got 2% of people where it ever becomes an issue. So now we're talking really small, you know, amounts. And then you have to look and say, okay, who are those 2%? Is it just completely random or is there a reason? And so we've actually found that there's all sorts of reasons where people aren't as healthy. They may be, you know, they're smoking. Long-term birth control pill use will weaken the immune system, or poor nutrition, or excessive alcohol. I mean, anything where your health is not as strong and your immune system is not as strong would put you into that 2% category.
Mm-hmm.
So,
this figure on women. According to the latest statistics I've looked at, is that it's actually the exception rather than the rule that women carry the HPV vaccine. I think there was a survey of college women who are presumably sexually active, and the majority, I think it was 60% or 70%, carried HPV. They tested positive for HPV. That did not necessarily mean that they had any manifestations of it. Manifestations can include what are so-called venereal warts or condyloma, which can be treated locally by a gynecologist. That's no picnic, but it can be treated locally. Or precancerous changes on the pap smear, or ultimately, if it gets ignored, it could go to cancer.
Right. So, as I said, it's a very, very small, you know, percentage. So, again, are we going to subject our girls to possibly having permanent neurological problems or even death, which, you know, is kind of a given? It's like, well, they do that for some of the other vaccines, but they're like, oh, well, we just know that there's a certain amount we're going to sacrifice and, you know, to get this herd immunity kind of thing. But, you know, does it make sense for this? And I think absolutely not. And, you know, the other thing that really, you know, clinches it for me beyond anything else is that there's some research that came out of MD Anderson and University of Texas Health Science Centers last year and the year before that, where they tested this mushroom formula out of Japan that's called AHCC, or active hexose correlated compound, which is why we call it AHCC. And so what they did was to test this mushroom formula against the HPV virus. And they started the normal sequences, you know, you try in a petri dish and then in animals and then in humans. And so they did those studies and they found in the petri dish it killed the HPV virus. When they did animal studies, they found that it prevented infections from occurring and killed the HPV virus. And then they did a human clinical trial. And this was extremely exciting because what they did was they took women who had the chronic HPV infection, so it wasn't clearing, and there's no Western treatment to kill that virus if you have the chronic infection with it. And so they treated women with the AHCC, and so everyone who had taken the AHCC for 6 months, it cleared them in 100% of the women. So now they're doing a large clinical trial to, you know, because that was just kind of a pilot study to see the feasibility of it, but with those responses to it, they're doing a large clinical trial right now to get the accurate statistics and how long a person needs to take it in order to have the virus cleared. So AHCC is something that's been shown to support every single cell type in the immune system. So it really makes the immune system very, very strong. And it lowers the risk of many different kinds of cancers, including breast cancer and pancreatic cancer and melanomas and prostate cancer. They actually prescribe AHCC in the hospitals in Japan because the survival statistics are so much better. But this is the...
And I believe it's covered by the government, too. It's considered a medication. And, you know, it's part of socialized medicine over there. You know, you get chemotherapy, radiation, whatever is conventional therapy, but you also get your supportive dose of AHCC.
Correct. Yeah, that's right. So, you know, for me, it's like, well, I'd much rather give my teenager AHCC as a supplement than to get them in, you know, vaccinated. And then also, if you do get the infection, then here we have, you know, something that looks like it's going to be extraordinarily effective at eradicating it. Where there is no Western treatment.
Do you happen to know, you know, we look at mouse studies and early human studies, do we happen to know what dose is required to get those effects? Because AHCC, you know, we stock it in our dispensary under the name Empower. It tends to be a kind of an expensive supplement, so we want to give people the 411 on what's the right dose. Do we have any of that information yet in terms of the optimal dosing?
You know what? They had different dosages, but they, the particular brand that I use is Quality of Life. And so then the normal dose is that you take one capsule twice a day. And I think in the study they did two twice a day.
It might be a little higher for a condition like that. Right.
Right. Yeah.
But maybe for prevention, you know, one twice daily is fine.
Yes.
But to treat a condition, you might have to double up on it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, not to be the devil's advocate here, but there is concern that HPV is implicated in another type of cancer, which is a dangerous cancer, oral cancer, because now it's believed that, you know, every oral cancer patient that I used to see during my medical training was a smoker. It was 100%. They were smokers.
Right.
Maybe they were also alcoholics. So, you know, that could mess up your mouth. But now we're seeing people who check in with oral cancer, and they swear up and down that they never touched a cigarette. They don't drink alcohol. So what's up with that? They're now discovering that there may be and this is the Michael Douglas connection, you know, where, you know, there was that whole kind of lurid story about he claimed he got it from oral sex. And indeed, there may be some basis for that, believing that, because HPV can be transmissible.
The guy drank incredible amounts of alcohol.
And he smoked a lot. Smoked a lot. Yeah,
smoked cigars.
Yeah.
That's right.
Right, right. I mean, he wasn't the, you know, he was not the most straight and narrow kind of guy during his early wild days in Hollywood.
Well, even, you know, later in his life, I mean, I actually met him. He was doing a movie in the town I was living in at the time, and he was, you know, closing down the bars and drinking and, you know, smoking cigarettes. So I think he had decades of, you know, what we know is a normal thing that increases your risk. And then later on, he said he did not have the type of throat cancer that was caused by HPV. So
what were you doing hanging out there? Were you ordering a double shot of carrot juice?
No, it was a high end restaurant.
Okay. Let's not go there. All right, so clearly there's some lifestyle factors associated with preventing cervical cancer, oral cancer, preventing the virus from finding a terrain in which it can happily survive and proliferate and cause mischief. So what are some of those lifestyle factors?
Well, you know, like for anything, as far as keeping yourself healthy, you want to avoid the junk foods and eat a plant-based diet as much as you can, and organically grown, you know, fruits and vegetables, whole grains, nuts, seeds, omega-3 fatty acids. Go to bed by 10 o'clock, get up by 6 o'clock. Those are the optimal hours of sleep. Get exercise every day. Minimize your stress, or practice an effective stress-reducing technique every day, like meditation or, you know, yoga. And, you know, those are just some of the normal things that you know that are the healthiest types of lifestyle things, and avoid eating the burgers and the fries and the junk foods and staying up too late at night and having, you know, smoking, drinking excessively. All those things, you know, are going to increase your risk of every kind of chronic disease, including these cancers, and also put you at risk for the a prolonged HPV infection.
On another theme, it would seem that the birth control pill is sort of a double whammy for HPV, because it depletes certain key B vitamins, particularly folate, which is a protective factor against cervical cancer. You know, I use a protocol in my patients who have abnormal pap smears. It includes folate, it includes AHCC, it includes more vitamin D and C and zinc and selenium, and it also includes something called DIM, which is an extract, dienylmethane, which is an extract of the broccoli family. And, you know, these are some things that have cancer-fighting and immune-enhancing properties. But the pill depletes folate, and also it encourages teenagers to experiment without barrier contraception, where, you know, there are other less serious and more serious STDs that you can get. You know, syphilis and gonorrhea have not disappeared from the scene, and of course there's HIV. So, what's the message to parents? You know, you just, you know, like Nancy Reagan, just say no, or, you know, what do you do?
Well, you know, they have to be taught about being really responsible, and of course, using condoms, I think, is a you know, the best way to go too. And I don't think that just say no works.
Right,
We've kind of proven that.
Sounds like you've raised some teenagers, possibly. So, okay. Well, so clearly, barrier contraception is protective if it's used properly. And if it's used, you know, sometimes it's, in theory, great. But then, you know, in the heat of the moment, sometimes it doesn't get properly implemented. Okay, so these are some of the ways that we can obviate the need to expose our kids to the unnecessary risk of the vaccine, which I have to say, I am pro-vaccine, like you. But my general advice is I discourage my patients from having their kids get these vaccines. This particular one, because, like you say, you know, we vanquish these horrible diseases, you know, like smallpox, I get it, you know, polio, what a scourge of the 1950s, you know, when I was growing up, we were among the first kids to get the polio vaccine. We were polio pioneers, and what a relief it was to our parents that we weren't going to get paralyzed or go on an iron lung. This is truly an advance, but here's a case where, you know, like you state, the risk-benefit equation tilts towards caution about administering the vaccine. The risk is not that great. The benefit is not that great. But there's a risk of downsides. So I agree with you on that.
Yeah.
So anything else that you might want to recommend vis-a-vis HPV?
Well, you know, like I said, I think it's really important. You know, this is just another, you know, evidence about how important it is that our kids be as healthy as they can possibly be. And, you know, as parents, I know it's difficult with teenagers in particular to get them to eat a healthy diet. But, you know, it's something that we really need to start with at as youngest age as possible, to be really conscientious about the effectiveness of eating an organic, mostly plant-based diet, and eliminating the sugars and processed foods and junk foods from our diet, because there's so much evidence about the diseases it causes, and, you know, the childhood obesity and the diabetes, you know, showing up in childhood, and hypertension and you know, I mean, it's just ridiculous. So I think we've played that one out, you know, and found out how that goes, and that, you know, we just really need to be much more conscientious about feeding our children as well as we possibly can, and not allowing them to eat, you know, all those various different junk foods, and have a lifestyle that also is very damaging to their health.
Okay, that's a great review of this important topic. And this is a logical point at which to pause because we divide our podcasts into two parts. In part two, Dr. Horner, I'd like you to take up the issue. Recently, Angelina Jolie drew a lot of attention, and she was lauded for being so forthcoming about this. Her dual surgeries, she had mastectomy and she had her ovaries removed in an effort to prevent herself from developing breast cancer and ovarian cancer. But this move has been critiqued by some people who believe that we shouldn't take such a radical approach to breast cancer prevention. We'll hear from you in just a moment. I'll remind our listeners that Dr. Horner has a great website, drchristinehorner.com, and we'll be right back with more on the subject of breast cancer prevention with today's guest, Dr. Christine Horner. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine Podcast.